Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of The Grueling Truth. I'm your host, Mike Goodpaster. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, San Francisco 49er fan, Matt Andrew Scavage. How you doing tonight, Matt?
And doing great and proud of it.
Good proud of here. That you're doing great or proud that you're a San Francisco 49er fan?
You know, I'm going to go with both on that one.
Okay. So who's the guest you got for us tonight, Matt?
Well,
I'm just kidding, Matt. We're supposed to have Dexter Carter on. We're waiting for him to call in. Hopefully he'll call in shortly. But
yeah.
In the meantime, we needed a backup top 10 list, I guess, because that's what we always fall back on if somebody doesn't show. This is our second guest in 2 weeks that haven't showed. Gerald Riggs had some problems last week with his phone, so he will be a guest in the future, though. So while we're waiting on Dexter Carter, I figure we go ahead and talk to top 10 coaches in NFL history, because Matt likes to do top 10 lists, and so do I.
Yeah,
but I figured I'd blame Matt.
We do.
We do.
Cool. I'll be the whipping boy.
You'll be the whipping boy. Well, you're a 49er fan, so you've been a whipping boy for 20 years now.
Yeah.
I know. No comments about the Bengals. All right, top 10 coaches of all time. We know that Bill Walsh will probably be in your top two, right?
We'll just have to see.
Okay.
Maybe like you, I'm going to change my mind as the list goes on. You just never know.
You won't change your mind. You're a 49er fan. You're stuck on the Bill Walsh stuff. You're stuck in the past, the History Network, History Channel, whatever you call it. All right, give me your number 10.
Number 10, I've got Curly Lambeau. Guy's got. The unfortunate thing is I had to make a new sheet. I don't have all my stats with me, but I know he ranks very high on the all-time wins list. Won, I believe, the first six of the Packers championships. Him and George Halas essentially were the NFL from the beginning. A lot of teams dropped off the map. The Packers and the Bears were two that remained, and he basically built that franchise got it off the ground, and it became one of the best franchises of all time in any sport.
Even better than the 49ers?
Well, can't argue with all the championships, so no, I'm not going to
fight
it.
That was for your dad. So,
yeah,
Tom Andrews, you're out there listening. Your son just said that the Green Bay Packers have a greater franchise than the San Francisco 49ers. But
I'll humor anybody.
Well, it's not really humor because you just said it was true. But my number 10 is Joe Gibbs. Joe Gibbs won, three Super Bowls, three different quarterbacks. Not many people have ever done that. My only problem with Joe Gibbs, and the reason I drop him down, is the play in Super Bowl 18. People talk about Pete Carroll's call this last Super Bowl and how was the worst call ever at a Super Bowl. Not even close. Down 14-3, I think it was, on like their own, 10-yard line. They throw a pass
like
in the flat with 12 seconds left that Jack Squirek picks off, runs back for a touchdown. But the guy was a great coach. He's on the Sid Gilman tree, just like 90% of all the coaches that are probably in this top 10 that are not 90 years old. Actually, I think that Steve Sable said it best about him, said that he built probably the most diverse dynasty in NFL history. Because if you look, from the first championship to the last, like I said, three different quarterbacks. You had Joe Theismann, Doug Williams, Mark Rippon. All three of them won a Super Bowl, three different quarterbacks over that decade time. It was, I think, extremely impressive, and that's why I got him in my top 10. Now, my number 9 is Curly Lambeau. I just figured I'd go ahead and bring that up since, you already had him at 10. I think the thing about him, was he was really the first coach to, you know, use the pass offense as a weapon and actually run pass routes. I mean, that's where the great Don Hutson came from. I mean, that's what was really what put him over the top and gave him an opportunity to be a great wide receiver in NFL history that people even 70 years later talk about. Also the first coach to run daily practices and like I said, utilize the pass patterns. He won 6 NFL titles. I think he had 1 losing season in 27 years, which hard to argue with that record. But who's your number 9, Matt?
Number 9, I've got Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson, basically, you know, gets hired by the Cowboys out of Miami. Takes over, I believe his first year was the 1-15 season. And
yeah,
it was pretty abysmal.
1989, yeah.
Yeah,
beat Joe 89.
Gibbs. he's got a rookie. Aikman gets thrown right into the fire. They did have Michael Irvin. But that was about it until the Herschel Walker trade, which may be the most lopsided trade in the history of the NFL, built the Cowboy dynasty, and they were a complete team. I mean, we did our top 10 Super Bowl teams, and all three of us had the 92 or the 93 Cowboys in the top 3.
Yeah, and I had them number 1, and if I remember, by the end of the show, we all agreed that I was right. So
I'm sure you agreed you were right, but that's all good. But the offensive line, legendary. One of the greatest of all time.
That was kind of a shot at me, wasn't it? But I'll let it go. Go ahead.
I don't know about that.
That was a shot, but okay.
You're from Indiana. It takes you a few seconds to catch up, but that's all good.
Yeah, you're from Wisconsin, Matt. You're from Wisconsin.
Right?
You're making fun of me being from Indiana, and you're a land where the Green Bay Packer fans wear blocks of cheese on their heads.
Yeah,
I mean, let's think
place.
About this. Now we're making your dad mad, probably, but, I mean,
yeah.
Green Bay
yeah.
Packer fans put cheese on their heads, and they
well,
idolize Brett Favre.
Lots of things they do. Green Bay Packer fans will buy dirt. They sold frozen tundra. That was probably dirt out of the back lot of the Costco that's up by Lambeau Field, and they call
maybe
it frozen
Brett
tundra. Just put it in the freezer. Exactly. So, yeah, by the way, Mike and I will always have a standing offer to any of our listeners who would like to call in and defend Brett Favre.
Yes, if you think Brett Favre is one of the greatest quarterbacks that ever lived, you could call 347-237-4391, and we can have that debate right now. Because me and Matt are both prepared. Because I don't think he's anywhere near a top 10 quarterback of all time, and I don't think Matt does either. Do you, Matt?
No. To me, he's the most overrated. I mean, that doesn't say he wasn't good at all, but he may be one of the most overrated quarterbacks I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I got him ranked at number, like, 63. But
oh, I got him at 62. We're pretty close on that.
Oh, you got him ranked higher than I do then. All right.
I got to rethink this list. But anyways, Jimmy Johnson, goes in, the 90s were, the salary cap era was basically built to stop the 49ers and the Cowboys. And Jimmy Johnson won 3 Super Bowls in a difficult era. Or, I'm sorry, he won 2. Could have won more had he and Jerry Jones gotten along. That was a fantastic and very young Cowboys team. And he comes back, and he was successful with Miami. And, anytime you get those guys that are able to pull off 2 Super Bowls, that says something about you.
Yeah, and I've got a guy at number 8 that won a couple Super Bowls also, which would be Bill Parcells. 2 different teams. Let's see, he won the Super Bowl with the Giants. He also took the Patriots to the Super Bowl, which back then was kind of unheard of. And then he took probably his greatest coaching job was with the Dallas Cowboys when he got Quincy Carter to take his team to the playoffs, which Quincy Carter was, I don't know, he was Jameis Winston before Jameis Winston was. But really, Bill Parcells, outstanding coach. And I didn't know this, but did you know he is currently a courtesy consultant for the Cleveland Browns?
I did not know that.
I did not know that either. But I just punched his name in to see if I could come up with some little factoid Look at that. You don't even use words like Ed Wisconsin, but a little factoid nobody knew about him.
No, we don't have that either.
But, I mean, he's a great coach with three different teams. I don't think you can really argue with him in the top 10. I mean, really, a lot of people would probably consider him a lot higher than that. But what's your number 7?
Well, I get to my number 8. My number 8 was Chuck Knoll. I got Chuck Knoll at number 8. Probably could put him higher, but guy won basically the Steelers through their whole history. Didn't win really anything. I mean, that was largely one of the worst franchises in the history of the NFL. Chuck Knoll arrived, I believe, in 1970. Maybe it was 69 or 70, somewhere in there. They get Bradshaw.
They were 1-13 his first year, I believe, also.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you got to be really bad your first year. I guess that's a rule. But they get Franco Harris, they start winning some games. They got the Immaculate Reception game that kind of launched their dynasty. And, that was – the 1970s was not an easy era to play in. You had a lot of great teams, especially in the AFC. You had the Raiders, Dolphins, multiple winning franchises, generally speaking. And, the Cowboys were always there. The Vikings were always there. The Rams were really good. A lot of really good teams in the 70s. But the Steelers were just – pretty much head and shoulders above everybody in the 1970s, back-to-back twice. And had they not had all the injuries in 76, that I think we agree, that may have been their best team.
Yeah, but defensively, I think it was by far their best team.
Yeah.
But so where are we at? My number 7, right?
Yeah.
My number 7, I'm going to go with Papa Bear, George Halas. What are they... first players, coaches, owners, and basically a pioneer in professional American football. Founder of the Chicago Bears. He also was a major league
baseball
player.
I have him at number 7, too.
Oh, I'll tell you what. About time you got something right. All right.
Yeah, founder
of
the NFL.
A lot of people don't know this. As a player, he was actually the MVP of the 1919 Rose Bowl. Co-founder of the National Football League. 8 NFL championships, coach of the year 63-65, named to the NFL 1920s All-Decade Team, and to tell you the truth, until I did the research on this, I didn't even know there was a 1920s All-Decade Team. Record for wins by a Chicago Bear wins for most wins, career wins 324 until Don Shula broke it. Don Shula didn't win 6 championships, though. Actually, the Bears even retired his number as a player, which was number 7, inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1963. 318 wins, just regular season, 148 losses, 6-4 playoff record. So he won almost 70% of his games, and he coached for like 1 million years. So
yeah, he was coaching forever.
Yeah. So if you want to go ahead and say something else about George Halas, that's fine.
Well, anytime you're the founder of the NFL, I mean, that was not like, you don't just go and found a league. He did an awful lot for the game of football, and his Bears, much like Curly Lambeau, his Bears had the war not happened in the 40s. That 1940s Bears, probably they could have won much more than they did. Didn't they have an undefeated team in the 40s?
They had an undefeated team that lost in the championship game, I believe.
Okay. But...
yeah, they did. I think like 1934, maybe. They went, I think they went undefeated and lost in the championship game.
Okay.
Not 100% sure on the year, but I'm pretty sure they did.
Guy had a real eye for talent. When he saw Gale Sayers out of Kansas... he just had to have him, and drafting what many believe is the best middle linebacker that ever played, Dick Butkus. The guy had an eye for talent. He was a good coach, founder of the league. He coached in several decades. I don't remember when he retired exactly, but he was phenomenal. All respect to Vince Lombardi, but I believe if George Halas had passed before Vince Lombardi, when Vince Lombardi died of cancer, if George Halas dies sooner, the trophy is called the George Halas Trophy. But,
well, unfortunately for George Halas, Vince Lombardi dies sooner, so he gets a trophy named after him. That's
right.
Kind of cold, but that's all right. That's
no disrespect intended.
Yeah, I was a little bored, so maybe a little bit. All right, who's your number six?
My number six is Tom Landry. Tom Landry, largely known as an innovator, he had it's amazing when you go back and watch older games or just old highlights, the way the shotgun used to be, it seems like they were standing like a punt.
it was a lot deeper, so far back. But it was for a lot different reason than it is nowadays. So
right. I mean, it really was about trying to get his quarterback as much protection, as much time to throw the ball as he possibly could.
Yeah, it's the same reason why they'd have their offensive linemen stand up and then reset. It was to try to block the view of the linebackers.
Right. Yeah, that's another thing. The Cowboys line, that was pretty unique. You go back and watch old Cowboys games, you don't see anything like that anymore. When it's like, oh, wait a minute, isn't that a false start? No, they're all doing it. They do it like pretty much every play. But Tom Landry was, the Cowboys, I believe, came in the league in 1960. And just a few years later, they were competing. They two very close NFL championships in 66 and 67. Very easily.
Well,
could
Landry
have been.
Was close to getting fired after his fourth year because, I mean, he had a losing record. I think he's first 4 years.
Yes. Yeah. They did not start out good. And they were able to put together a really good team. They had outstanding defense. And it carried over into the 70s. They were in Super Bowls five. And then they won Super Bowl VI. They were in the NFC Championship, I believe, in 73. And, then they get there in 75. And, they won it all again in 77. I mean, they were good from like, 66 to, like, 84. It was it was quite a long time. They were really good. And so, like, Landry's teams were almost always, if they weren't in the championship game, they were always really close.
All right. Well, my number six is Paul Brown. He used to be higher, but, I mean, come on. When you have a son like Mike Brown, that really diminishes your legacy, I think.
Yeah, I got him at number 11 just because he has Mike Brown as a kid.
You gave him at number 11 just because he was the founder of the Cincinnati Bengals, the greatest football organization in the history of the National Football League. Brown is, I mean, you got to look at, Brown has probably as many, if not more, innovations than any coach in NFL history. First coach to use game film to scout opponents. First to hire a full-time staff of assistants and test players under knowledge of the playbook. He invented a modern face mask, the taxi squad, and the draw play. He also played a role in breaking professional football's color barrier, bringing some of the first African-Americans to play pro football in the modern era onto his team.
Right.
So, I mean, his problem is he was not well-liked because he was strict, controlling. And, I mean, really, let's face it, one night he produced Mike Brown. So that's a big drawback there. He was a four-time AAFC champion, three-time NFL champion, three-time Sporting News Coach of the Year, three-time UPI NFL Coach of the Year, won a national championship in college, won a state championship actually, he won six state championships. He coached 6 years of high school football at Massillon Washington High School, Canton Massillon, which those people are crazy about football. In 6 years, he lost like one game and won six straight state championships. His team was named the high school football national champions four of those 2 years. He's in the NFL Hall of Fame, Walter Camp Man of the Year 1989. I mean, he was such a big deal that Massillon built a stadium that seats 10,000 for their high school team and named it after him. Won over 200 games in the NFL. But, yeah, he's at number six because he produced Mike Brown. All right. Well, that's a pretty big drawback.
Everybody remembers, there was a really good article.
That's like being the father of Charles Manson. So.
And I remember there was a a very interesting article written by one Mike Goodpaster about why Mike Brown is a loser.
Well, he is a loser. And his dad, I mean, the Cincinnati Bengals died the same day that Paul Brown died. Paul Brown died after the 1990 season. He died in 91, I think August of 91, right before the Bengals went to training camp. And since that time, they have never won another playoff game. So actually, the last season Paul Brown was involved with, we won a playoff game. Ever since then, Mikey Boy has not won anything. So,
right.
So we up to your number five, correct?
Yes. My number five is Joe Gibbs. Joe Gibbs.
Wait a second. You got Joe Gibbs ahead of Paul Brown.
Well, yeah, Mike Brown, in my eyes, Mike Brown really hurts the situation.
Yeah, but that's just stupid. Go ahead, though.
And
Joe
Gibbs'
kids aren't the greatest
Bill Walsh's
kids in the
career.
World either, though. But go ahead.
He also tried to torpedo Bill Walsh's career, so I figured I'd throw that one in
for
you. He
didn't try to torpedo it. He knew what Bill Walsh was, an overrated white-haired coach.
All right, anyways. Joe Gibbs basically invented the one-back offense to try to deal with Lawrence Taylor. Good innovator, but, yeah, like you, that was probably the worst call in Super Bowl history. And look, you watch the game, and you watch the highlights. And I've even heard Joe Gibbs and Joe Theismann tell the story about when they were arguing on the sidelines. And Joe just kind of stayed stubborn and just said, I believe it was it rocket screen? And he just looked at him, pointed right in the face and said, run it. And despite, Theismann not wanting to run it, they ran it.
Well, Charlie Sumner and Tom Flores were on the other sideline telling Jack Swirek that's what they're going to run.
Exactly, because I believe in the regular season game they ran it against them.
Yeah, I think it was a touchdown against them. So.
Yeah. And it worked for them a lot, and so they knew it was coming. And, boy, what a 12 seconds to go. I mean, come on, kneel the ball. You're on the 10-yard line. But that's probably one where it hurts him.
Sounds like something Jim Tom Sula would do if he could ever get to a Super Bowl. All right, my number five. My number five is Bill Walsh.
Okay.
102-63 with the 49ers, 10-4 postseasons, won 6 division titles, NFL Coach of the Year twice, 93 elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, 3-time Super Bowl champion, NFL 1980s all-decade team. Like I said, he won 61% of his games. I think he was a heck of a coach. I think that he would be higher up on this list if he'd coached 2 or 3 more years, because I think he would have added a couple more Super Bowls.
Yeah, but I think they definitely could have won those in 89. For sure 89, maybe 90 as well. And
he was five. Yeah, he was a great college coach too.
Right. Yeah,
I'd argue if I put him at 5, but okay.
Well, I mean, I have an idea for at least 2 of the guys that I have them. I'm interested to hear who the other two that I'm not thinking of are.
Well, let's get started right now. So we'll go with my number 4. Now, these are all 4 guys that I think had better careers and bigger impacts than Bill Walsh. I'm just putting it like that to make it more interesting discussion. But my number 4 is Tom Landry.
Okay.
It's hard to compete with a guy that has, 20-some winning seasons in a row. And a guy that also built his team from as far down in the ground as you can get up. It was an expansion team back when they used to basically screw expansion teams over. Innovative-wise, I mean, Bill Walsh runs the West Coast offense, which I don't think is near as popular as it was 10 or 15 years ago, but I also think a lot of that's because people have actually added to it like they do with most things. But, I mean, the thing about Tom Landry is he created a 4-3 defense in the late 50s, and the 4-3 defense is still a defense that a ton of teams use. Won 2 Super Bowl titles. won 270 games, third most wins all time for an NFL coach. His 20 playoff victories are second most of any coach. Was named the NFL Coach of the Year in 1966, 1975. And I mean, 20 straight winning seasons. And I know at one point, I think they lost their opening game in maybe 82 or 83, and they'd won like 17 straight season openers. Was also,
yeah,
I mean,
that's right.
he was a Pro Bowl defensive back also with the Giants in 1954.
Yep.
Was also, I mean, he was first team All-Pro. Like I said, Coach of the Year twice, Cowboy Ring of Honor, Hall of Fame, two-time Super Bowl champion, five-time NFC champion, winning record in the playoffs. I think this, my difference between him and Bill Walsh is I just think that he was successful for a lot longer time. And, I mean, I think when you look at it, I mean, if you look, from the time he got done playing football, he coached in the NFL. He was coaching the NFL in the mid-50s with the New York Giants. I mean, he was a player coach. So you're looking, he coaches in the NFL for almost a half a decade. And in that half a decade's time, other than those four first seasons he had with the Cowboys, I mean, he had a total in 46 years of five losing seasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
Landry has, he's got the longevity on his side that, you know, I can see
well,
where.
Well, it's not just longevity.
That could
he
be
has
issue.
Done a lot of stuff. And I mean,
yeah.
He won in three different decades, which is not always
right.
easy to do because, you know, players change in those decades. And the way you got to treat those players changes. I mean, to me, Bill Walsh, 9 or 10 years. When you compare him, there's nobody else other than Jimmy Johnson in either one of our top tens that had that short of a run.
Right. He did have that. Yeah, those are the two short runs.
But, all right. Here's your number four.
My number four is Bill Parcells. Bill Parcells, really successful anywhere he went. Those Giant teams. Those are some nasty Giant teams. I mean, you know, he's got kind of a coaching tree himself. Bill Belichick came out of there. And, you know, you watch those Giants teams. They manhandle people. Lawrence Taylor, Pepper Johnson, Carl Banks. A lot of great players. You know, he didn't have the greatest quarterback. Yeah, Gary Jeter.
There you go.
Well,
Phil Simms was pretty
good. Gary Jeter was under... Yeah, Bill Parcells, at least 1 year, right?
I think a couple years. Well, no, wait. Parcells' first year was 82, wasn't it? Or 83?
I think it was 83.
Well, he was the defensive coordinator for him, though.
Okay, so he was around him for a while.
So he played under him for a few years.
Right. So, you know, he goes in, you know, the 86 Giants. You know, we talked about that team on our top 10 Super Bowl show. And, you know, 86 Giants is definitely one of the best. Then, real quick,
our live show's almost over, and you're not a special guest, so I'm going to go ahead and just interrupt you real quick and tell everybody that our live show ends in 90 seconds. You can catch at the top of the hour, midnight Eastern time. You can go on there and get the rest of the show, which I'm sure everybody's excited to hear what the final three are and hear Matt, you know, pick Bill Walsh in the top two. But... And if he does, I mean, it's just a joke. But next week, the grueling truth, we will have the finest week ever. We will have Tuesday night's boxing show. We'll have former welterweight champion of the world, Carlos Palomino. And next Thursday night, we will have, in my opinion, one of the three greatest linebackers in NFL history, Robert Brazil from the Houston Oilers. So make sure you catch us next week. All of our episodes, where's Roger Craig, Tom Flores, everything's podcast from the past. And that kind of rhymed, doesn't it? But you can catch the podcast, listen to the shows anytime. Now, it's been about a minute. We'll see if Matt can continue where he left off.
All right, with Parcells. So in 1990, they go and kind of a little bit of an improbable run. They knock Montana out and, you know, were able to, you know, get that field goal in at the last minute, get to the Super Bowl, and beat one of the greatest teams to never win a Super Bowl, the 90 Bills, to get the second title. And then he ends up going to the Patriots, I believe, in what, was that, 94?
And yeah, I believe so. It took the Patriots to the playoffs. I think it might have been 93. I think second year they made the playoffs.
Yeah, they make the playoffs.
And he lost to Bill Belichick in that playoff game.
That's right. He was on the Browns. Yeah.
Yep.
And then he continues to build that team up around Drew Bledsoe and Ben Coates. And they get to the Super Bowl in 96. They nearly pull off, very easily could have pulled off that Super Bowl if it weren't for the Desmond Howard return. But, you know, he takes a Patriots team that, boy, they had been bad for quite a while. And, you know, just a couple of years' time, they're ready for the Super Bowl. Ends up going to the Jets. Takes over a 1-15 1996 Jets team. First year, they go 9-7. The next year, under veteran Vinny Testaverde, who really had not won, like, a lot of playoff games, takes them all the way to the AFC Championship game against, you know, one of the great Bronco teams ever. And then he goes to the Cowboys. Or was he at, that's the Jets. And then, yes, he goes to the Cowboys. The Cowboys weren't very good. Takes Quincy Carter, the quarterback for the Cowboys. It leads them to the playoffs. This guy was just successful at everything he did. Plus, he was a general manager. And not a lot of general managers can also coach. He was just great at everything he did.
I guess you're done there. All right, who's your number three? This should be Bill Walsh because there's no way he can be higher than that.
It is Bill Walsh.
Yeah, and that's too high. But go ahead. Let's hear all the great things about Bill Walsh.
Well, Bill Walsh did have the shorter career. You know, we talk about taking teams from the bottom. That the 78 Niners at 2-14, and that was about as bad of a team as you could imagine. And then because they were so poorly run in the mid-70s by Joe Thomas, the GM, they lost all their draft picks. They ended up getting, they went 2-14 his first season there, much like Jimmy Johnson and, you know, some of these other guys. They start off really bad, but then they start getting better, and by 81, they were pretty good. And he out-coached Landry twice in that season and led them to their first Super Bowl. And, you know, they just, his West Coast offense, I mean, just nobody had really seen a complete offense. We've seen shades of it with when he was in Cincinnati and the things he learned from Sid Gilman. When he was able to be a head coach, and he's also the general manager, he built that team from the ground up. And, one of the greatest teams ever, the 84 49ers, and the 89 team, which was, you know, largely his team. You know, had he just stayed or stuck around, he could easily have won, you know, the 89 and the 90 Super Bowls, and, you know, it wouldn't have been even a question that he's at least top two. But, you know, he was also very innovative, like you said, about Paul Brown and bringing African Americans up. He had programs to help get coaching opportunities for them. And he wrote the book that many head coaches use called Finding the Winning Edge. Many head coaches consider that the absolute Bible for coaching. And he
Who
brought a lot to the game. And, Brian Billick, how many guys did I have on that? John Harbaugh, a lot of guys in that interview that I watched. I just watched Bill Walsh, The Football Life. They go through it.
See, because you're a 49er fan. It's all you watch is 49er stuff.
Well, we'll let you think that. It's all good. It's not my fault that you didn't choose a better team to watch.
Well, you know what? I grew up and cheered for the team I grew up for. I didn't grow up in, like, Green Bay, where you just said they have one of the greatest franchises ever, and decide to become a 49ers fan. And I believe you decided to become a 49ers fan after they won a couple Super Bowls, too.
No, that's not true.
Okay.
True. I became a 49ers fan in 86. I'd never
seen
him in 84.
I'm friends with your dad on Facebook. I'm just going to send him a message tonight and ask him what went wrong.
Because that won't be biased.
It wouldn't be biased. I mean, you're cheering for a team that's like, it'd take you like 24 hours to drive to one of their games. Okay, that's what I thought.
Number two, Mike.
Well, since we didn't do my number three yet, I'll start there. My number three is, far more accomplished than Bill Walsh. My number three is Chuck Knoll. Now, you talked about... Yeah, he is. Well, see, you laugh and you mock a man that won more Super Bowls than your guy did. And also, you talked about you couldn't imagine a team being worse than the 49ers in 1978. In 1969,
exactly
Chuck Knoll took...
All right.
You said you'd be hard-pressed to find the worst team. We could play the tape back.
Not many teams that were worse.
In 1969, Chuck Knoll took the helm of a franchise which had played in one postseason game in the previous 36 seasons. Over the next 20 years, he had 15 winning seasons, won four Super Bowls. I don't think there's any coaches that have won more than four, are there? Was elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1983. Basically, he ran the team as a GM and a head coach, just like Bill Walsh did. Knoll built the team through great drafting. He was the first guy to start an African-American quarterback, first NFL coach to have a black assistant coach. It's hard to compare to what he did. I mean, he won four Super Bowls. And if you remember, even in 1989, 20 years later, he's a few points away from going to the AFC Championship game there, which probably leads to them beating the Browns and going to a fifth Super Bowl, where they would have smacked the San Francisco 49ers right in the mouth.
Sure, they would have. In 89, right.
Prove it. When is the last time the 49ers dominated the Pittsburgh Steelers? See, now you're being biased again. All right, Coach of the Year, 1972. Coach of the Year, 1989. 17 years in between. He's on the all-decade team, 70s and 80s. Pro Football Hall of Fame. Four Super Bowls. Yeah, I mean, come on. Four is more than three. There.
Yep.
That's my argument. Four is more than three.
All right. Sounds good. Well, my number two is Vince Lombardi.
Yeah, I think our one and two are pretty much the same. You got Bill Belichick at number one?
Yes.
Or did you decide to take him off because his balls were deflated?
No. No,
you
know, I had nothing to do with his balls.
Ball humor in this, hell.
Exactly. No, I got Lombardi at number two. Guy took over a pretty woeful team that was bad through most of the 50s. And you're talking about a guy that didn't really even know basketball, but yet when he coached basketball, his team won the state championship. He just knew how to motivate guys. And, you know, a guy goes in and turns the Packers into a dynasty. He wins five titles in 7 years and, won the first two Super Bowls. Guy was just the epitome of a great motivator, fantastic head coach. One of the best that ever was.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And with Lombardi and Belichick, there's not much else that really needs to be said, I don't think. Which leaves us with 7 minutes to talk about other things. But
well, that was
I
the
do
thing
have
everybody's
bring,
talking about.
I know. It was my son tonight in his Little League baseball game. I was going to say the same thing because he wants to listen to this tomorrow because I told him we would come on air and I would talk how he was 3-for-3 and has now had hits in 6 consecutive at-bats. He tripled, doubled, and singled tonight. His team won by the 10-run rule, so he didn't get a chance to go for the – what's that thing you call a hit for the cycle. So what else do you think is going on in the world? So I had to give a shout-out, though, because, you know, he's listening. So my son's name is Grant Goodpaster, and he's batting .787. Go ahead.
That's a pretty good batting average. Oh, family's important.
It's all right. It's all right. I mean, if he gets it up to .800. Well, I mean, you know, I need a retirement plan. And let's face it, I mean, it's not working out for me so far. So hopefully he can play a little Major League Baseball.
That's right.
And then you went to a Milwaukee Brewers game where the attendance was 12, I think, correct?
It was bad. We walked in. We basically sat down. We're in the Dodgers. We're right behind the Dodgers dugout. And I have never seen Miller Park that empty. I've been to several games. That was really empty. It started to fill out by like the fifth inning, but it was a lot of fun because he started out, they batted around for the first, in the whole first inning. It was great. Sitting by all the Dodgers fans, they just were like, they just couldn't believe the Brewers were hitting so well in the first inning. And they ended up playing pretty good throughout. They had a good outing by the pitcher, and they won the game. He got smacked around.
All right, now I have a very important question for you. All right. Now, you told me that you couldn't help it because I couldn't pick a better football team. But yet, let's get this straight. You live in Wisconsin and became a 49er fan. Now,
yeah.
The Packers obviously have the better franchise, except for those years when Brett Favre was there. So, you're going to pick a baseball team, and you live in Wisconsin. Why didn't you just piggyback off the 49ers and pick the Giants, and you could have won three World Series?
Well, the Giants are my second team, but I am a
Brewer. Oh, the Giants are your second team. Well, you know what, man?
Yeah. I do like
I can't stand people that have a second team. You should only have one
well,
team.
No, I do like the Giants. There's actually really nobody I dislike in baseball, except maybe the Cubs.
I don't like the Cardinals.
Yeah, they don't bother
Their
me.
Their fans
I mean,
are idiots.
I don't
Same
like
thing
that
with
they
the
beat
Cubs. And if anybody's got a problem with that, we can call in and argue that, too. All Cardinals and Cubs fans are idiots. Cardinal fans are idiots just because they're idiots. Cubs fans are idiots because they act like, you know, they want their team to win. When we all know they would rather they lose so they can suffer on TV all the time and feel sorry for themselves and get shots in the crowd like in 03 with everybody crying when they lost the game. Where, come on, you haven't
right.
won anything in 100 years. Can it really be that
yeah.
big a shock that you just lost?
Right.
I mean,
yeah,
you spent almost 100 years of getting your ass kicked, but yet you're going to sit there and cry because you lost the game. I mean, you lose.
Right.
I mean,
it was
on,
so devastating.
I didn't think it was devastating at all. I found it exhilarating.
No, they act like
because you
was
know
so
I was always
when...
the Marlins were my second favorite team that year.
Oh, interesting.
I think the Royals might be my second favorite team this year.
Yeah, that's fun to watch.
So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, Cubs fans are pretty annoying up here. I hate when they come to Miller Park, but
yeah, they're whiny little
do?
Girls. That and, you know, there's probably more Cubs fans in Wisconsin than there are Brewers fans.
Got a lot of Cubs fans where I live.
But the Brewers will always have 1982 because you know the Brewers are kind of like the Bengals. The Brewers are kind of like the
yeah.
Bengals of Major League Baseball. Yeah,
that's
we
why
had
I
the
don't
one
really
flash.
Care.
Yeah,
hard
you had
to
like
care.
The one. Great year in, like, 1982, but still, even in that great year, you had a 3-2 lead to World Series, I think, even, didn't they?
Yep. It's kind of like going into Super Bowl.
Don't even say 23, because if you say 23, I'm going to put you on mute. Nobody
absolutely.
Wants to hear
about
Super
going
Bowl
in with,
23 or Super Bowl
going
16.
Going in with your 16-13 lead.
Or how Dexter
like
Carter, a 49er, stood us up tonight. We've never had a Cincinnati Bengal not come on the show when they said they would.
Yeah, you're right. You are 1-0.
And also, our most listened-to show ever was when we had a Cincinnati Bengal on. And he was a starting linebacker, and that was it. We had a Hall of Fame 49er on. And we got 15% more listeners for the normal Bengal starter as opposed to one of the greatest all-around running backs of all time. It was a 49er.
Well, hats off to you,
so
Mike, for all your fantastic advertising down in Cincinnati. I think that's really good.
Fantastic advertising? What the hell does chastic mean?
I said fantastic.
Oh, I thought you said, well, I mean, wasn't there any good advertising in San Francisco?
No, you did a better
job. Oh, no, wait, because you live in Wisconsin and should be a Packers fan. I forgot about that.
I don't just follow whoever. I make my own choices. I
believe
you said you're very
right.
much for that.
Well, you ought to just become a Giants fan. It would work out better for you. Football and basketball or baseball. But
well, no
we're
one
almost
thing. I'm not going to go with the Bengals.
Well, I mean, that's your loss, buddy, all right, because we got Mike Brown. So next week we'll have the 10 worst owners in NFL history, and Mike Brown will place top three. Get the Ursays. The Bidwells, if you remember the Bidwells in St. Louis. But well, we're out of time tonight. Remember, next Tuesday night, Carlos Palomino, 11 o'clock Eastern,